Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. Chris, this is a post-draft edition of our show. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. The NFL draft is one of the guiltiest of my guilty pleasures, Jim. I love it.
So do I. It's the absolute best. We had in our Ask Andy segment last week where the listeners could send in questions. One of our listeners sent in the question essentially saying, shouldn't the draft be a holiday? And I actually agreed with it. It should. I want to celebrate it. I want to have fun. I don't want to have to wake up early the next morning. I think we should have Friday off as a holiday.
I personally would be all for that. I don't know if I, as an avowed draft weirdo, would want to, you know, demand that I be accommodated in such a way. If we're going to have a sports-related holiday, Jim, I think I've maybe even mentioned it before. To me, top priority is we should have two federal holidays, Thursday and Friday of the NCAA tournament, and then Monday after the Super Bowl. Although it seems like Roger Goodell's plan is that he wants to move the NFL regular season from 17 to 18 regular season games, and then you would have the Super Bowl taking place on a holiday weekend anyway. So we would finally get the Monday after the Super Bowl. But that Thursday, Friday of March Madness weekend, people are like, oh, you're joking. I'm not joking. I'm 100% serious. Look, they take like 2 months off a year in Europe. We can take two extra federal holidays off here in the U.S. of A.
Well, Chris, I thought they were holidays. I take off.
You've made my point for me, Jim. Two, I should also mention, we just had a monumental moment here in Happy Valley this past weekend. I'm not a big country guy, but I know if you are, like, Luke Combs is a big deal, played a concert at the Bryce Jordan, or excuse me, not at Bryce Jordan, at the Beaver Stadium this weekend, and it was packed. The weather wasn't maybe exactly what you'd be open for, but it wasn't too bad, and it looked like people were having a great time. It was a big deal.
I love that kind of stuff, and that kind. Now I'm going to segue, I'm going to use that as my segue into our draft conversation. One of the things...
Well, before you do, let me just say, the reason I bring it up is for all the Penn State football fans who are very conscious of Penn State's need to compete in the college football arms race, this is an example of how the times are changing in terms of efforts to monetize the facilities and bring more money into the football program ultimately. Like this is what these are for. And I mean, I'll tell you, it's still jarring to those of us who have been around for a while, because this never would have happened under Joe. That place was a cathedral, and you do not roller skate on the floor when services are not in session, you know?
Well, and I understand that, but yet I still don't understand that. For years and years, you have this huge facility that you use 6 or 7 times a year only come fall. I think being able to use it this way, it's fantastic. There should be more of that. And my segue to the NFL draft was one of my favorite things now, Chris, is having the draft throughout the country. And they had the draft in Detroit, and the number they gave out was, I guess it's over the 3 days, that they had over 700,000 people showing up for it. And I saw some folks want to ridicule people who show up there with their face painted and dressed up. What is wrong with that? Nothing. I think the analogy to the concert is go have fun as a communal type thing for a community. It's fantastic. And if it draws more attention to the NFL, good for them. It's a great business decision, Chris.
Yeah, man, I agree 100%. I'm a live and let live type of personality. You know, as long as you're not hurting anybody else, if this is what you want to do with your free time and your disposable income and it brings you joy, you should do it.
Definitely. Have fun with it. That's what they were doing with the draft. Good for them. Before we get into some of the Penn State players in the draft, just a couple other observations about the draft. Could you explain to me, Chris, how players somehow, they've already completed their season, they've gone to the combine and worked out. How do players' draft status move so far up and down when absolutely nothing happens between then and draft day?
My actual theory on this, Jim, is that so much time is spent parsing the differences, splitting the hairs between these guys, and there's so much time between the end of the college football season and when the draft happens that you just see scouts and other evaluators with these organizations start to get bored and outthink themselves. Honestly, I think that's a lot of it. And oftentimes they maybe pay too much attention to the smoke that's blowing from the other teams, and they get suckered in terms of, oh, you know, this guy's draft stock is rising, this guy's draft stock is falling. And a lot of it is just misdirection that's put out there for the precise reason of trying to muddy the waters and trick another team into making a mistake. That's, to me, one of the things that I love the most about the NFL draft is just studying the contrasting philosophies about resource management, because that's really what it is. It's the managing the precious finite resource of your current and future draft picks and roster building through management of those resources. I think it's super, super cool.
It is. And look, speaking of roster management and asset management, I know you are an Eagles fan, as am I. A little bit later in the show, we'll get into Howie Roseman, the general manager of the Eagles, and how he manages his resources. But first, I also want to talk about, like, the top of the draft where all the quarterbacks are and the controversy of Michael Penix being picked in the top 10 and people just going absolutely crazy. Now, I'm not saying it was the smartest decision, and maybe they could have even traded down and still gotten him, but these experts going absolutely crazy. How could Michael Penix be a top 10 draft pick? But Chris, are these not the same guys who said Mitchell Trubisky should go ahead of Patrick Mahomes a few years ago?
Yes, for sure. And by the way, going back to the point I just made, it's all about resource management, Jim. I'm actually with the experts. I think that was an absolutely ludicrous selection by the Atlanta Falcons. And you could, I mean, they're just clown car organizations in the NFL. And unfortunately for the Falcons fans out there, you know, Atlanta is one of them. Yesterday for me, as we're recording this, I'm watching the third round of the draft, and they're having, you know, the International Fans of the Year announce the team's picks. And they had the Atlanta Falcons guy, and I'm thinking, my God, imagine you live in a foreign country and you decide, I'm going to become a fan of an American football team, and you get stuck with the Atlanta Falcons. It's all about resource management. And Mitch Trubisky is another great example of the Bears bidding against themselves to move up one spot in the draft and select a quarterback he ended up flaming out. Teams that make dumb decisions managing the finite resource of their pool of draft picks are the ones that are consistently showing up again and again in the top 10. And the Bears and Falcons are both great examples of
that. They are. But the one thing I will point out, though, and this is me being a bit of a Michael Penix fan, I liked him from his days at Indiana. But a couple years ago, the Eagles, remember, they wasted a second-round draft pick on a quarterback when they already had a good young quarterback. Why in the world did they do that, Chris?
Yes, and a couple of things. I love Jalen Hurts now as the Eagles quarterback. I loved him as a college player and an NFL prospect, but I will freely admit, I thought it was complete insanity for them to do what they did in selecting Jalen Hurts in the second round. So yes, your point is well made. The flip side to that is, again, it's about roster building and when you take the quarterback and how you manage your salary cap. And let's not forget that Michael Penix has age and injury history concerns that Jalen Hurts did not. We should also keep in mind that Howie Roseman, through skill and luck, 100% some of this was luck, managed to thread the needle of not paying a severe price for overpaying for Carson Wentz and then having to eat his dead cap hit, the chances of another team being able to replicate those circumstances are very, very low. So, yes, as an Eagles fan, I am tremendously grateful that worked out. But there is no way you should look at that scenario that played out in Philadelphia and say that's the model for how we should manage our roster. I mean, it's the equivalent of, like, I'm trying to make a decision in high school about what I should do with my life, and Michael Jordan tells me to forget college and pursue basketball because that's what worked for him. I mean, it's that level of do not assume because it worked once in one situation, it could be replicated to others. So, yeah, I am with the experts on this 100%.
Well, my only – and I talked about this before, and it's not me necessarily saying that was the right pick, the smartest pick, the greatest pick. It's me kind of reacting to the critics of it when it's really about the quality of that player. And if Michael Penix turns out to be an excellent NFL quarterback, will these critics in a couple of years come back and say, you know, I've never been so wrong in my life as I was about that? So it's that judgment of talent. And the problem is with quarterbacks, they are so hard to judge. They fail as often as not. The consensus often turns out to not be the right answer, Chris.
Yeah, sure. Again, the question is, could they have moved down and still acquired Penix? Almost certainly. And then if they missed out on him, would they still have been able to draft a defensive player who could help their team right now and help out their quarterback? They're paying $100 million in guaranteed money. Like, yes, yes, and yes. And I agree with you on the point of admit when you're wrong. I admit I was probably wrong on the point about Jalen Hurts. I mean, in practice, certainly I was wrong. But in theory, it's like one of these things where it's like, you know, if your buddy says, hey, I'm going to bet my mortgage on my ability to make a full court shot in basketball, and you tell him, no, don't do that, it's a terrible idea, and he makes the shot, was your advice wrong? Like, still probably not. That's still an ill-advised move. And what the Falcons did at quarterback, in my opinion, was ill-advised, no matter how it works out.
All right, Chris, that's the last word for quarter number one. We got lots more draft talk when we come back after this.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th, and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. We are talking about the NFL draft. And Chris, this quarter, I want to turn our attention to the Penn State players in the draft. Couple surprises, couple places where good surprises, couple not so good surprises. What stood out to you among the Penn State players who were drafted?
Well, let me ask you, Joe. I'm going to turn it around and ask you a question of what the biggest surprise was for you, and then I'll tell you whether or not it was the same for me.
I think Curtis Jacobs not getting drafted surprised me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be my second most surprising aspect of the draft. It doesn't top the list for me, though, simply because of the way the linebacker position has become devalued in the NFL. There's just not the same premium there was on it. And so when you have a guy who starts getting projected as a day three linebacker, you think, oh, man, the way the board falls, he could end up going into the undrafted free agent pool. And sometimes, by the way, that's not a bad deal. if you're going to drop down into the sixth or seventh round, like, yes, it's great to be able to say that you were drafted. On the other hand, when you're looking about the immediate future and your ability to make a roster spot, if you don't get taken in round seven and then you become an undrafted free agent, that gives you the opportunity to shop around and field calls from teams and look at their roster and look at the system that they're running and their coaching staff and make a decision about where you think you might have the best chance to catch on. So, yeah, you love to see guys get that, you know, bullet they can keep on their resume forever, that they were an NFL draft pick. On the other hand, it's about making the league. And so when you get to that point, sometimes falling into the undrafted free agent pool isn't the worst thing in the world.
Well, just a quick note before you get to your biggest surprise. A show Landon and I did a couple weeks ago prior to the draft, we went through every Penn State player. And what was interesting is I found, and I can't remember who I used, but I saw, I think it was from The Athletic, Dane Brugler, their draft guru. And I used his seven-round draft to guesstimate where all the Penn State players would go. Landon used a different setup. And when you looked at the comparison between the two, a lot of them very similar, very close between the two about where players would go. Literally, Caden Wallace, in one of the draft estimates, he was going to go 90th, the other one 91st, okay? That's how close they were. Curtis Jacobs was the one, though, it really stood out. One of them had him going 207th, and the other one had him going 84th, okay? It was like the difference between third round and seventh round, something to that effect. So you knew at the very least there was a difference of opinion on this player.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes guys just slip through the cracks. Like there are some tremendous players in the league right now. There are guys in the Hall of Fame who came through as undrafted free agents. I mean, to me, the undrafted free agent story that's nearest and dearest to my heart is my co-host Brandon Noble. I mean, he did not get drafted and ended up playing 10 years in the league. And if you look at it the last several years, the guys who have made rosters as undrafted free agents from Penn State have done very, very well. Ryan Bates, Kevin Givens. I'm blanking on his name. The receiver from Downingtown who played for the Vikings, and now I think he was on the Steelers last year. Just totally had a brain fart on his name, but maybe you'll remember. But anyway, I think Curtis Jacobs has the skill set to be, and he's in Kansas City, which is a good situation for him. And, you know, Spags is an unbelievable defensive coach. Even if he can make a practice squad there, which is the route that Brandon followed. He was practice squad NFL Europe for a couple years before he made it up to the big leagues. That can be a blessing in disguise. So I think there's still plenty of pro ball in Curtis Jacobs' future. But for me, the biggest surprise was you talk about Caden Wallace projected to go around pick number 90. I know he took a big jump his last year at Penn State. Teams prized his guard tackle flexibility, or what they perceived to be his guard tackle flexibility. I think you can look at the history recently Penn State has had of actually putting some good quality linemen into the league. I think Phil Troutwine is starting to develop a reputation in the NFL as producing guys who are game ready. And I knew all of that, but still for him to go 68th and more importantly to go ahead of Adisa Isaac, that was not a shock to me, but a huge surprise. Everybody talked to me after day one of the draft and said, who's the next Penn Stater to go off the board? And I said, oh, almost certainly Adisa. Now, maybe Caden's a day two pick, but I think Isaac's the next guy. And I was really surprised that the projected draft position of those guys basically flip-flopped. Because like I said, Caden Wallace was the 68th pick and Adisa Isaac was the 93rd.
I have a nephew who's a big Patriots fan. And when he saw, Caden Wallace going to him, it's like, okay, Jim, what's the story on him? And in thinking about it, I almost feel like Caden Wallace from his play a couple years ago got a certain rap, probably deservedly so, and he's been making up for that for a while now. But I think if you look at last year's tape and how he performed, I don't think it's a surprise that he was picked where he was.
Yeah, it's 68th overall is rare air, man. I'm not sure, just in terms of my, and all due respect to the player, in terms of my estimation of his ability, they may have taken him a little too high. On the other hand, you know, this is a big, big year for the Patriots organization. They're having a wholesale change in philosophy there from what they've had for the past two decades. So, I'm sure they have strong convictions about the type of player they wanted and what their needs are. And it's like you said with Penix, you know, if you get a player who can make an impact for you and he's a guy you like, then at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter where you took him. Right, it's the end result, and I think your point about Caden having to overcome the reputation he earned early, and sometimes the perception not matching the reality of production on the field is spot on. The jump he took from his first 2 years seeing significant snaps at Penn State to last year was substantial, and if you are judging most on what you saw last, which is what I think a lot of scouts in the NFL did, yeah, he's a legit day two guy.
And it's interesting you say trust what you saw last. Kalen King is like the anti-Caden Wallace.
Oh, boy. What a precipitous drop, right? Again, I don't want to keep harping on this, but I remember some of the folks who told me that I was just outside my mind, idiotic buffoon for suggesting after the season he had, Kalen King would do well to come back to Penn State. Well, here we are. I mean, again, you get your opportunity and that's all you can ask for. On the other hand, when you come into the season as a projected first round pick and you're two picks away from being in that undrafted free agent pool, it's hard to argue that you maybe made the best decision, right?
Well, the other part of that decision, which I hope some other players took notice of it, after definitely a subpar season, and let's face it, this is a guy, he's got to know what his performance level is going to be like at the combine, okay? He can't go into that thinking he's going to run a 4.35. He's got to know he's not going to perform. Yeah. I mean, those are... numbers are pretty static. They are what they are. How could he not go and play in the bowl game and give himself the opportunity to put up some good tape?
You're preaching to the choir, man. I think sometimes people in life, they just outsmart themselves. And I think this was a case of that. Now, again, talking about people outsmarting themselves, I do also think it's possible, Jim. Yeah, Kalen King did not have the season we expected. I thought throughout the year he showed some deficiencies in his game. It is also possible that this is another case of the league swinging too far in the other direction and massively undervaluing the player, right? For him to go with the third to last pick in the draft, it's entirely possible Green Bay got unbelievable value there. But I also think one of the big issues for Kalen was that every team in the league was at least taking a look at tape on Marvin Harrison Jr. Because you evaluate players at the top of the draft, even if you're not going to be in a position to select them, because number one, you never know what can happen with a trade-up scenario. But number two, you do your homework on a guy because maybe one day he's going to become a free agent. You want to be familiar with him. So everyone is watching Marvin Harrison Jr. so closely, and Kalen King had his worst game of the season. I mean, that kid got cooked again and again by Marvin Harrison. I mean, it's not hyperbole to say if you're going to place the loss to Ohio State on one player, if you're not going to point to Drew Aller, you can point to Kalen King. And I think his estimation in the eyes of the NFL was never the same after that game. So maybe what he should have done, Jim, was played in the Peach Bowl and skipped the Ohio State game.
I think if he had a do-over, he just might do that. But I think it also, Chris, gives you a peek into the mindset in the NFL and the overreaction to things. If you, that time that they have from the combine to the actual draft, they are looking for things to nick a player on. Is there an old injury? Yep. It's like when they talked about Spencer Rattler, he did some kind of reality show, quarterback show as a high schooler. And they were talking about that as what was costing him, you know, a lot of money that he fell in the draft because of that.
Yeah, and I know some people said that was ridiculous, but, you know, I don't know, man. You know, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. It's a great example of you reap what you sow. No matter where you are in the ladder of life, there are going to be people who you feel you got to kiss their butt and people you feel you can treat them like crap. And I say you learn about a person by how they treat the people they don't have to be, you know, kissing up.
Great point, Chris. All right, that's it for quarter number two. Stick around, lots more to go.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training and State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We are talking NFL draft. And when we finished up in quarter two, Chris, we were talking about, I brought up Spencer Rattler and how interesting it was that they talked about some kind of reality show that he did as a high schooler when I believe he was ranked as the number one quarterback recruit coming out that year. And apparently there were some character flaws that were shown then. You make a good point about talking in terms of, well, when people show you who they are, believe them. And what I wonder is if those 4 years in college may have humbled him a bit. It would be interesting to see. But what it also does, I think, is going back to Kalen King, I think the point you made, everyone was using the evidence that they had, the recent evidence, as a knock on Kalen King. And once he starts falling, that just keeps happening. Just the way you said with Curtis Jacobs. There's opportunity there for teams. Those guys who fall in the draft, that provides an opportunity, especially when you're using, hey, you know, a late round, end of late round draft pick for a guy like Kalen King, who has shown some talent and some abilities. I don't think that has all completely disappeared. But anyway, let's move on. One of the things that I mentioned earlier is that as an Eagles fan, I want to get your take on the Eagles draft. Like I said, I use Landon Tangwall, the Steeler fan, to tell us about the Steelers. I'm going to use Chris Buchanani, the Eagles fan, to tell us about the Eagles draft.
I thought, all in all, the Eagles had a really, really strong draft, and that's not a unique opinion if you look at all the metrics that are used to measure these things, which, you know, that we can have varying opinions on how accurate those are in terms of the quantified value of draft picks and the projected, you know, tiers of talent and everything. But to the extent that anyone has been able to put hard numbers on these things, the experts agree that both Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, for like the third year running, it's been a great run for the Commonwealth in the NFL draft recently, but both teams did very, very well. I thought that the draft board falling the way it did in the first round for Philly, which had an acute need at corner in terms of their starters aging out and the need to bring in top talent there and ending the season on a really sour note in terms of getting thrown on. It was just unbelievable for them to be able to select a guy who was in the consensus top two corners of basically everyone's draft board without having to move up from pick number two. And for them to then wisely leverage some of the draft capital they had accrued in previous years to move up and get Cooper DeJean, who was a first rounder on most teams' boards at the 40th overall pick. I mean, just those two picks alone would justify saying they had a really good draft. But then I think they were really smart with moving up and down the board on day three, accumulating more assets for next year, which again can turn into players or opportunities to move up if they have a guy who they like. And still, I thought, did really well bringing in guys who are going to help the organization. As opposed to the last couple of years' drafts, I think this was like maybe a lower stakes year for Philly, in part because they have had so much success over the last few seasons bringing in talent, that it was really more about bringing in a few high-profile free agents who they thought they could help the team this season, and then beyond that, making sure they lock up the young talent they've acquired in previous years to second contracts. So it wasn't a situation where Philly had to get guys at certain positions. They were in the enviable luxury position of just being able to pick guys who they thought could A, come in and make selective contributions this year, but also they had freedom to bring in some developmental guys who didn't have to see the field in 2024. So I thought, given that as the lay of the land going in, they did very, very well.
I did too. And you brought up a point earlier talking about asset management. Obviously, talent evaluation is probably the most important thing. If you look at, you know, a Mitch Trubisky and decide he's going to be your savior versus Patrick Mahomes, okay, that's probably the most critical thing. But this asset management and being able to read the board, Howie Roseman just seems to be so good at that. Was he fortunate that there was that run on quarterbacks and offensive players so that the cornerbacks that he wanted, like Quinyon Mitchell, dropped into his lap? Yes, he was fortunate, but he also read the board correctly. Then, yep, seeing that he wanted Cooper DeJean, like you said, he had accumulated some other assets, identified the guy he wanted, got a guy who was a first-round grade by pretty much everybody, and he was able to get him in the second round. That's a tremendous use of assets. Is it a guarantee that those two guys are going to be stars? No. But would I bet on them? Yes. Okay. And it's because of that asset management that Howie Roseman seemed to be so good at. I'm even going to go back to the whole, you know, Jalen Hurst thing that you said, well, you misjudged it at the time. I was a huge Jalen Hurts fan out of college, and to get him, I thought, late second round, it was an evaluation of the talent, and they made that the most important thing beyond just, well, we already have a good young quarterback. It's, let me bring in this tremendous asset at a tremendous value, and they read that correctly by their talent evaluation. Now, what do you think of some of the later round draft picks? I think it's pretty obvious what they did at the top was very good, very smart, tremendous use of their assets. How about through the rest of the draft?
Yeah, so the thing with Philly's draft this year, and again, like as I talked about it, in previous years, they've come in and you thought, man, there are holes on this roster that if they don't get filled via the draft, they're going to have some big problems come the fall. And the Eagles were not in that situation this year. So I think you can put an asterisk on all of these day three picks and say, hey, look, these are just guys they feel really strongly about, many of them as developmental players, and they've got the freedom to bring them along slowly. They don't have to put them on the field, many of them really hardly at all this year, if they don't flash in camp, or they don't take a big leap. They can bring them along slowly. So just to quickly run through it for folks, starting in round four, Will Shipley, the running back from Clemson, who apparently they had liked for a very long time, and the pro comparison I've seen for a lot of guys is Austin Eckler. Pretty good vision, breaks tackles, very good in the passing game as a receiving back. Ania Smith, a wide receiver from Texas A&M, who I actually do not know a lot about, Jim. Like, I am, as I said, somebody who really digs down deep into this and maybe didn't get quite as into it this year as I have in previous years. So a few guys kind of slipped off my radar. I didn't know too much about this guy, but I do know that Nick Sirianni, who made his bones in the league as a wide receiver coach, put a circle around that guy and said, this is one of the players we should prioritize if we have a chance to get him. One place where Philly could upgrade for sure is at their third receiver spot. Now, again, they already have Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown and Dallas Goedert. So and Saquon Barkley is a great receiving back. So they got plenty of targets in their passing game. But, you know, you look at that as somebody who maybe could has an opportunity to bully his way into the lineup as the third receiver on the field. I loved. And listen, I don't even care if it doesn't work out. I'm a complete sucker for Jeremiah Trotter's son getting selected by Philly. I mean, I would just sit in front of the TV the whole start to the fifth and sixth round watching those Philly picks coming up, and they're trading down, and I'm like, come on, nobody take them. And when you saw Philly move up, I knew that was going to be it. I knew that was going to be the pick. It was awesome. I think you look at the Super Bowl team from a couple years ago, unbelievable performance out of an undrafted free agent linebacker from Wisconsin, TJ Edwards, and I think that's the ceiling for Jeremiah Trotter. I talked about when we discussed Curtis Jacobs, the devaluation of linebacker, really at the college and the pro level. And to me, if you want a Penn State comparison, look at Kobe King. Like, he does not fit the mold of what you think of as a modern college linebacker. He looks like he should be wearing a neck roll and playing for Joe Pa in the 1990s. But he gets on the field because the guy's a football player. Like, that's what I think Trot brings to the Eagles, and the bloodline is just, you know, another absolute fantastic addition. So I love that pick. And then super intriguing. He fell very, very far in the draft, so I love where they got him. Johnny Wilson, the 6'6 receiver out of Florida State. That's one of those developmental guys I talked about, as is Dylan McMahon, O-lineman from
NC State.
Yeah, and so, you know, these offensive linemen, Jim, like, the Eagles are fortunate to have in Jeff Statland, I think, the best offensive line coach in the league. Very hard to argue what he's done with the top draft picks they've brought in, but you can also look at a rugby player from Australia taken in the seventh round, elevating to Pro Bowl left tackle. So whenever Philly takes an offensive lineman, I really don't worry about what round they got him in, what his pedigree was, what the draft grade is. I know that when Stout gets his hands on him, he's going to get the most out of him. So, yeah, I think I love the picks. And again, like I'll just mention, I thought Pittsburgh did very, very well in the draft. I sat in on the Goon and Ironhead show on the Thursday before the draft, and I had Chris Buzzsaw Adamski from TripLive.com on to talk about the Steelers draft, and we both agreed the ideal situation was if they could get a tackle in the first round and have Zach Frazier from West Virginia drop to him in round two, and that's exactly what happened. So congrats to the Steelers fans as well. Once again, you guys knocked it out of the park in the draft.
It was pretty much a consensus that both the Steelers and the Eagles did really, really well. I do want to point out, you brought him up, that Johnny Wilson from Florida State, and a big receiver with his size. Again, that's the kind of guy you pick in the sixth round. It might be a big miss, but if he hits, that could be a big hit. And being in that wide receiver room with the two studs they already have, if he becomes like that third option wide receiver, he could be very interesting. All right, Chris, that's it for quarter number three. We're going to get a little closer to home in Penn State news when we come back.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 training in State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. We've been talking mostly draft. Chris, I wanted to get a little closer to home, but one last note on the draft. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was fun. I thought it was great. James Franklin was able to make it to two different draft parties where he could hit both
awesome.
The first-round picks, Olufoshinu and Chop Robinson. He managed to make his way through D.C. traffic and hit both of them before their pick was made. That is probably the best trait of James Franklin, that ability to do that type of thing.
And here's the thing. One of the things that I like about James is that I truly believe he successfully splits the difference about as well as you can in modern college football between sincere, authentic care for his guys, that he is not putting on a show. That is real. I have talked to way too many players over way too many years for me to believe that's an act. It's legit. But he also understands there's a level of showmanship to this. And I think there are still a lot of fans in our fan base. And part of it is just kind of the, you know, I don't know, PA German and Scots-Irish roots that we have here in central Pennsylvania. And some of it is a lot of us spent decades with, Joe Paterno, who was, for his time, a no-frills guy. Although, again, I think people lose track of just how outside the box Paterno was as a recruiter through the 60s into the 80s until a lot of the sport caught up to him. But James understands the camera's always on you, right? Like, just like Spencer Rattler learned, the camera is always on you. James understands that. And so, yeah, that was legit care for these players who he has been with for years and being with them at that moment, that big pivotal moment in their lives. But, you know, credit to Penn State for also understanding that's a chance to show off to all the future Nittany Lions out there, whether they be high school recruits or transfer portal guys, that, hey, Penn State put two players into the first round of the NFL draft, and this is a coach who's going to care enough to do the little things to be there with you when the moment comes. So I thought it was a great example of what is real and concrete about Penn State and about James Franklin, and also our ability to market that and be competitive in the talent acquisition game, which is everything.
You put that really well, and it's both elements of it. It's fantastic, and I just also want to point out that James, just like Joe did, understands that you're recruiting the whole family, okay? The family is part of that.
Yeah.
So when he goes to these events, he's not just doing this for the players. He's doing it for the families.
Yeah, and you know, and look, I understand some people may be uncomfortable with the, well, okay, now we got to film it and we got to put it out online. But, you know, listen, if you are one of those people who comes to me and complains about, oh, there's too much flash and there's too much exposure and everything's got to be put online and everything's got to be a show. If you want to be one of those people and you want to complain about that, be my guest. It's a free country. But then don't be a hypocrite. Don't also be the person who comes to me and piss and moans about, well, why can't we get the same quality of player as Michigan and Ohio State? Do you want us to put in the work to try to market the program, or do you want us to just be, you know, prim and proper and quiet and not show off? The middle road is disappearing in modern college football. And like I said, if there is somebody who tiptoes through that minefield more effectively than James in the entire sport, I don't know who it is.
I agree with you there 100%. And the fact is, it has been effective, okay? And yes, I want them to beat Ohio State and Michigan, get to that next level, but they're at a pretty good level where they are, and a lot of that is the recruiting and the image of James Franklin creating this family atmosphere at Penn State. And I'm with you, too. As I interact with players, you find out that it is authentic. Our colleague Landon Tengwall will talk about it. In the situation he's in where he has medically retired, he said it would be very easy for the coach to just forget about him, but that has not been the case with James. And that's a situation you don't hear James going out in public about that. It's not being filmed, but that just tells me, confirms to me, that is who he really is, whether the cameras are running or not. All right, Chris, I want to shift gears here quite a bit. We got report again this week of another player entering the portal. Devon Townley has entered the portal. Again, not a surprise there. He hasn't really made it to the two deep after being in the program for several years. But it's still, by the count that I'm seeing, that puts them at like 94 scholarship players. How in the world are they going to get down to 85? And by the way, the portal window closes this week. It closes at the end of April.
Yeah, I wish I had a good answer for you. I mean, the answer is I don't know, really. I do, as we've discussed previously on this program, I do believe there probably will be some cases where you see NIL money come in to make up the difference to allow a kid to continue to attend Penn State and be part of the football program without being on, quote unquote, on scholarship. Again, like betraying the extent to which the loose threads of the NCAA have been pulled to the point where almost the whole fabric is coming undone when you start to look at this thing. But it's, and as I said last week, it's possible, you know, maybe Pat Kraft or someone else up there in Bryce Jordan Center is just listening to, well, actually, their office isn't in BJC anymore, but that's neither here nor there. They may be listening to this show and going with my idea that they're just going to thumb their nose at what's left of the NCAA and say, hey, whatever. We're paying these kids scholarships. What are you going to do about it?
Well, I just don't picture Penn State being the rebel program and doing that. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure I picture them even doing something that some other schools are doing, like you indicated. Let's use NIL money to make up for it and compensate these players. So I'm not sure what they're going to do. Might we just see a number of players announcing this week that they have entered the portal? I'm not sure, because the pace at which they have been hitting the portal has been so slow. I'm just stunned by it, Chris. I thought for sure we would be seeing not necessarily a lot of players that you said, oh no, that player left. More often a player like this, like Townley, where you go, well, I get it, I understand. You know, it was kind of like Malik Mega a couple weeks ago entering the portal. You said, well, I get it. He hasn't cracked the two deep. Probably not going to see much of the field. So that's how that works. But speaking of hitting the portal, I did want to ask you, this happened several days ago, and we've talked about it with a couple of the other shows. Keandre Lambert-Smith has ended up at Auburn. Good fit or not, I'm not sure. I suspect NIL money had something to do with that. I personally have been a bit surprised about the national reaction to it. In the media, national media has treated him as the number one wide receiver in the transfer portal, and I never really thought of him that way, or at least now I don't. But effectively, I feel like it's come down to this. It was a trade. They traded Keandre Lambert-Smith and they brought in Julian Fleming. Would you make that trade?
Yes. I'm trying to be nice here, Jim. You know, Auburn is, I think most will agree. I know certainly Alabama fans would. Auburn has tended to be a program that thinks very highly of themselves, sometimes to a delusional extent, gets very angry when they're not given credit for things they haven't actually accomplished. So you asked me about whether or not there's a good fit between player and program, and my estimation is that yes, it's hand in glove, as a matter of fact.
When I looked at it and saw he was going to Auburn and the way the conversation went, I think that Auburn fan base might be very disappointed. I believe they think they're getting a number one receiver, and candidly, I don't think they are, Chris. And, you know, again, there's probably people at Ohio State who are talking to us who would say, boy, those Penn State fans, they think they're getting a lot more with Julian Fleming than they actually are.
Well, and look, there's the old saying that if a guy's in the portal, there's a reason he's in the portal, right? And in the case of Julian Fleming, I understand, like, right, what from what we've seen from him, what his limitations are. Ohio State fans need to understand that we're grading on a curve here in Happy Valley, okay? Like, not quite good enough to crack the top two in Ohio State's receiving room is a completely different animal when it comes to the group of wide receivers we have at Penn State. And again, to the Auburn fans, I would just say, caveat emptor.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think that, and I don't know if that is, especially if he's being treated like the number one receiver down in Auburn and gets number one receiver attention from the defensive backs that come out in the Southeast Conference.
SEC defensive backs. I mean, yeah, listen, I wish Auburn lots of luck, and I wish Keandre Lambert-Smith a lot of luck. He made some big, big, big plays over the course of his Penn State career, and he got his degree here, and I mean, he's a Nittany Lion, and I wish him a lot of luck. But you're asking me my honest estimation. Do I think Auburn got this game-breaking, game-changing addition to their roster? I really don't. But I'd be happy to be proven wrong. I wish the kid lots of luck.
Yeah, I don't wish him ill, but the reality is this is a player who at the end of his Penn State career was barely targeted the last several games. That to me was the Penn State coaching staff. They made a decision before the season was over with their evaluation of him was. And I think Auburn fans are going to find that out soon enough also. All right, Chris, that's going to have to be it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Just make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th, and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.